Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR, and we've withstood the regular season. We've seen 9 playoff races that are officially in the rearview mirror and plenty of drama last week in Martinsville. All of that and more on the final episode of the Stay Green podcast for the 2022 NASCAR season. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by racing analyst and professional sports bettor Chris Wormy. And Wormser, we got a lot of things to unpack, and we got a pretty lively ticket in our back pocket that I think a lot of Stay Green listeners are going to be sweating with us come Sunday.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, are you not entertained? I mean, what an amazing finish. And the storylines are super abundant. And I think that I have spent more time talking to my non-NASCAR fan friends about what happened this week at the Martinsville race than I have in all my years of talking about this sport. So definitely a lot of storylines, and I'm excited to kind of to pick it apart and dive in on the show.
Pretty wild, the way things unfolded at Martinsville, and we will get to that for those folks that may be tuning into the Stay Green podcast for the first time all season. I encourage you to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there, and you, of course, can also follow all things Bet the Board at BetTheBoardPod. We break things up. Stage one, a recap of what we saw, and there were plenty of storylines, not just in the Cup Series, but I want to talk a little bit about what unfolded in the Xfinity race on Saturday as well. Stage two, typically where we'll do a playoff reset or we have this postseason. We're going to mix things up a little bit, though, and talk about the outright market there. And today for stage three, it's all about the 4 drivers vying for NASCAR immortality and a championship to be crowned at Phoenix. So, Wormser, let's get right into stage one. And when you look at a Martinsville recap, the Golden Boy does it again in an elimination race. Christopher Bell, a win-or-go-home type scenario, puts together a tremendous performance and races himself into the final four.
I mean, well done by this kid. I think I'm trying to come up with a nickname for him, and I think I've come up with AI, not Allen Iverson, but like artificial intelligence. Like, the guy just gets so much better throughout the race. It's not like Chris Bell, you know, I know he had a poor qualifying and he's kind of worked his way through up the field, but man, he gets to these elimination races. And you know what? I think that because he's put in a position to win, he's allowed to make aggressive decisions when it comes to tires. And it's paid off in a year when we didn't think tires have mattered nearly enough. This guy is literally advanced throughout the playoffs by taking tires and being aggressive. So kind of ironic that in a season where we haven't seen the fall off that we thought we'd see, you see someone win a race twice in an elimination format by taking tires and just going out and winning the race. So hopefully we see more of the same out of him. Obviously, I'm a little biased. I do. He's the only guy that I have a championship ticket on. And, you know, I am at 22-1. So if any of the Chris Bell bias comes out, I just want there to be full disclosure that, yes, I am pulling for him to win the race.
Yeah, and we will get to how to handle those potential long shot tickets that are out there. I know a lot of listeners have reached out. They may have prices in that 16-20 range. They may have 50-1. They may have upwards of 200-1 if they shopped around and had a lot more confidence in the 20 machine than I did. The one thing for me with Christopher Bell, though, outside of his driving ability, which deserves all the praise, all the accolades, and everything we want to share with him, you have to imagine having an experienced crew chief like Adam Stevens, who's been there and done that as far as playoff races when he was atop the box for the 18, pays dividends. And Christopher Bell's team, when it mattered most on Sunday at Martinsville, did all of the things you have to do if you're going to win a championship, the exact opposite of what we saw unfold for his teammate in the 11, who was once again plagued by losing spots on pit road.
I mean, NASCAR's a team sport. you have to make sure that you're firing on all cylinders. Very rarely can you just have one element. You can't just have speed. You have to have speed, and you have to have the right decisions from a strategy perspective, and you also have to get on and off pit road without losing spots. And I thought that the 20 team did an amazing job this week putting him in a position to win. And I'm telling you what, if you put Chris Bell in a position to win week in and week out, and he has fresh tires or equal tires as everybody else, he's as good as anyone. And I've been high on Chris Bell for a long time, but a credit to that 20 team. They made the right decisions from a strategy perspective, and they got it done on pit road. And they were, you know, they're kind of the MVP of the weekend. Chris Bell just had to go out there and pass a car that had way older tires that was also just trying to win the race. Their only chance in the 14, no chance for them to come down and take tires and be in the conversation. So just a well done by that whole team. And it was, you know, what I loved about it the most was seeing the emotion in Chris Bell. Like, these guys care so much. And so, you know, I'm to the point where I've watched Chris Bell his entire NASCAR career, and to see him kind of progress and make it to the championship four is pretty cool.
Yeah, he's shown mettle. He's been here before. He won a truck championship in the past. He's raced in the Final Four for the Xfinity Series, and we'll see if he can finally get, or I should say finally, kid still got a bright future ahead of him, if he's able to grab a championship at NASCAR's highest level. When you're talking about things that unfolded at Martinsville, especially on the Cup side, Sunday, though, we would obviously be remiss if we didn't highlight arguably the most aggressive, the most daring, and the most enigmatic move we may have ever seen in any race, let alone an elimination race, that catapulted Ross Chastain from the outside looking in into playoff contention. You look at what he was able to do, adding most significantly to the lore of the historic half-mile short track with a shocking trip around turns 3 and 4 that knocks Denny Hamlin out of the playoffs. Chastain completes the final lap in 18.845 seconds, Worm, 0.864 seconds faster than Larson's pole-winning time. Peak speed through turns 3 and 4 was 50 miles an hour, easy for me to say, 50 miles an hour faster than any other recorded at that track. I had to watch that thing 50, 100, 150, 200 times from different perspectives, go through various social media channels. NASCAR did an outstanding mashup with all the spotters and the crew chiefs and the audio from what they were trying to do to unpack all of it. How do I even put what we saw Ross Chastain do into context?
Okay, I want to show you a tweet, or I don't know. I think that it was just referenced you know, on the NASCAR gambling spaces that Derek Yoder puts on, but they had auto racing analytics on, and they always have an interesting take on lap times and speed, and it's a great visual. And they said that if Ross Chastain had done that on every lap, now we know that that's not possible. The second place car, the 20, if you take their median lap throughout the entire race and you put that up against Ross Chastain's one lap, Ross Chastain puts the 20 car, who would have finished second, 50 laps down.
10%.
He would have
10% of the laps run there, he would have put him down.
He would have put him 50 laps down, and then 51 laps down, there would have been the 5, the 11, and 12. I mean, this is... You know, I actually did like the post-race poll where I just talked with Derek Yoder about some of the things happening in the race. And I was kind of speechless. And then it was funny. Someone, a buddy of mine, said, hey, you're paid right now to not be speechless. But it was so hard because you listen to this mashup of these crew chiefs. I mean, Eddie DeHaan was the best. I thought, well, first of all, Logano's laughing so hard at this whole scenario. I mean, Logano was one of the guys that got passed. And then you look at like Eddie DeHaan, where he all of a sudden you're like, what the hell did he just do? And it was just, everyone was so shocked at this. And you know what? I'm all for this happening in this scenario. You gotta get in. And Ross Chastain has thought outside the box. I think all of Trackhouse kind of does that on a week to week basis. And it takes some watermelon sized balls to drive it in there right on the fence. And he did what he had to do to win. Now, I don't know that I'm a big fan of this gonna, you know, happening week in and week out. Cause what are you going to do? Like at Martinsville, if you're an eighth, you're like, well, if I do this, I can win. Well, that's if someone else in front of you doesn't do it. And I don't want this to turn into a, you know, lay it on the wall last lap. And where does it end? Does it, does it happen just in 3 and 4, or do they try it in 1 and 2 and then, you know, stay in the gas in the 3 and 4? Like, are you going to come from like 16th to win the race? And can you do it at other tracks? Are you gonna be able to do this at Phoenix? Or like, should I get into what I had someone do this?
Yeah, I think it's a great time. It's obviously tough to articulate it here because we don't have the element of video, but it's even more reason for people to follow you on Twitter, and I'll share the clip as well when this podcast goes live. But walk people through what you had one of the more prolific iRacers out there do and what the results actually yielded.
So Adam Cabot is a great iRacer, and he races a ton of different series on the iRacing circuit. I don't know much about it, but I reached out to him as a friend, and I said, hey, can you actually go through the simulator and actually see if this will work, what Chastain did will work at Phoenix? And because I know the teams are doing this, like, everybody's sitting there kind of scratching their head going, hey, is this something we're going to need to prepare for just in case? Like, if you're leading the race and you have a 0.5 of a second lead over second place, you have to have a plan for the guy behind you to say, like, hey, your spotter needs to say, like, he's Chastaining, or he threw it on the wall and he's coming fast. Then you got to do it. So I don't think that we're the only people that are doing this, but he was kind of shocked, Adam Cabot, when I asked him to do this. He's like, wow, of all the things that you've dealt with in NASCAR this year, the tires and the new cars and all this uncertainty, now you have to factor this into your handicapping. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm reaching out to you. So he went and did it. He didn't think that it would happen at Phoenix. However, he was wrong. He did it on fresh tires. He did it on fresh tires, and there's a great side by side, which I'll post on my social media right after this launches. But he was 0.6 of a second faster doing the Chastain, run in the wall. And he sent me a message like, holy cow, you're going to probably see this on Sunday. And what he said is he did this on fresh tires, and he thinks that it would be even faster or more advantageous if he was on older tires. So
basically what you're telling me is, with a caution with 10 to go, a team's going to toss scuffs onto their car with a chance to win the championship, and this is what we're going to see on four.
I have no idea. I don't think it's necessarily scuffs. I think that it's just you're going to see a higher beta, a difference between the leading car and a car chasing. You'll see a larger difference in lap times if there's more tire wear. So, 60 laps into a run, when guys are really falling off, like, you all of a sudden don't need the tires because you have the wall to steer you. So I think that you're just going to gain that much more. Like, it might be 0.6 of a second a lap on fresh tires, but it might be like 1.1 seconds if it's 70 laps into a run. And so this has me, as someone that tries to make money predicting the sport, has me a little nervous, because there could be Larson could do this to win the owner's championship. Right. So throw another car into the mix that's trying to get a finish and win a ton of money. Like, do we have to factor this in? This has me kind of scared and squeamish to stay away from most of the championship contenders this weekend.
I wonder if there's a discussion that's had behind closed doors, because I don't think NASCAR can say anything about this forward facing. I don't think that you can take something that's operating in shades of gray, make it black and white, and hand out penalties here. But you mentioned Kyle Larson, and Larson was arguably one of the more outspoken drivers, given what Ross Chastain did to get himself into the final four. I believe it was an interview with Dustin Long where the words he used were embarrassing, and he said he tried it once at Darlington and was embarrassed when he did it there and was thankful he didn't win the race. It's great when they come out and say all that. It's a little bit different when you're in the heat of the moment and you understand what you can achieve if you're going to try this. So I'm dying to see, when this video becomes live, which it already is now as the show is out there, what people in NASCAR take notice, the folks that we interact with, and it should be fascinating to say the least. But we'll obviously be watching come Sunday to see if anybody wants to think outside the box and get a little bit more creative. Kevin Harvick and Cole Custer both said that it was pretty impressive, took guts, and they applauded the outside the box thinking. Just when you thought you'd seen it all with Ross Chastain trying to use the access road at the Indianapolis road course, he takes things to another level where there isn't a clear rule stating that this can't be done. But Worm, you know what the best part about this is? Imagine how much worse it would have been for NASCAR if Ross Chastain gets into the playoffs 2.5 hours later when the six gets disqualified instead.
Yeah. So this is the best thing. outside looking in, you're like, wow, that was had to have been tough for Denny Hamlin. You know what would have been way worse for Denny Hamlin is them celebrating as a team and then all of a sudden finding out that the six failed inspection, gets DQ'd, and then Chastain gets in on points that he would have scored in stage one and stage two. So this is kind of a blessing in disguise for the 11 team. And it is so ironic that whatever happened, happened to Denny. You know, after the saga between the 1 and the 11 all year, for I was dumbfounded. Todd, I had no idea. I'm like, who just passed Denny? I'm like, wait.
Oh, I had no idea what was going on. They go, Chastain is 15 lengths behind. He's got no chance. And then suddenly it's on the broadcast. Ross Chastain has pointed himself into the final four. I go, wait, what?
I thought I couldn't even. So at first I was like, wait, what happened? Like maybe those five drivers that he passed, because I think he passed five cars. He was in 10th and then finished 5th. Like, what the hell? But so like my brain wasn't processing that. And then I'm watching the replays. I'm like, oh, this is fast forward. Like they're fast forwarding this replay. It's like, wait, no, they're not doing that. And the fact that it was in on Denny, you know, it, that just kind of furthers the drama there. And I do have some opinions on, you know, we'll talk about this later when we talk about the playoff drivers, but you know, just very ironic that he steals this from Denny. And you know what, to Denny's credit, all he said was, well, he executed that well. What are you going to say? Like, it's the one of the most iconic moves in NASCAR history. And, you know, Denny's kind of the butt of the joke. But ultimately, with the six failing inspection, I think that the 11 team's got to be thrilled that they had to just deal with that in the moment versus celebrating and then finding out a few hours later that they would not have gotten in, that actually the one would have based on Brad's DQ.
Yeah, a little bit of shock and awe there, obviously. And the reason we bring it up and we spent as much time with it, because it is something that I think has to factor into the gambling calculus as you look to build a profitable card this weekend, not only in the Cup Series, but you wonder in the Xfinity Series. I don't think you'll see it in the trucks, but something to factor in. And when we're talking about the Xfinity Series, we don't do a ton of deep dives here. We will obviously touch on their championship four and the trucks very briefly as part of stage two, but I figure you got strong sentiments about NASCAR Jesus and what he pulled to try and bump his teammate from a spot in the Xfinity Finals.
I understand he's got to win races, this Ty Gibbs kid. But ask your grandpa what he would prefer. Would he prefer you to, would he prefer to have two teams in the championship four or one? And I have no issues if this is if anyone but his teammate. You know, you got to go race for the win, and then you know, I guess the boys have at it. That hopefully that stuff works itself out. But to for it to be a teammate, I'm telling you what, if I'm Denny Hamlin or Martin Truex Jr. or Chris Bell, I am sitting Ty Gibbs' ass down at the beginning of the year saying, if you ever pull this, you better take your helmet off when you get out of the car. You just can't, like, you know, some of the things that he's pulled have been so immature, whether it's bumping someone on pit road when there's, you know, people walking on pit road, whether it's fighting Sam Mayer with, you know, by keeping his helmet on. To me, I do not think Ty Gibbs is ready for the Cup Series. And we're probably going to see him in the 18. I know there's nothing, you know, set in stone yet, but there's a lot of immaturity there. And, you know, I don't know. I'm torn because, yes, I want guys to go out there and win the race, but I also want them to race. And I don't like
that's what, not racing. That's wrecking. Not racing. There's racing for the win, but that's driving straight up someone's ass.
Yeah.
Knowing exactly what the consequences were going to be. It's one thing if you get inside of him through turn two and yes, you slide him up the hill. It's a little bit different than what we saw.
Exactly. It's like if you look at the Hamlin Chastain at Pocono. Now, he says it was just a racing, isn't it? But you know what? I am okay with Denny racing anybody that way to go win the race, or what we thought was going to be a race-winning move. I do not have any time for what Ty Gibbs did this weekend, especially to his teammate. But also the same thing happened at the first Darlington race when, you know, Logano made zero effort to even try to pass Byron. I mean, he just went in there, sailed it into three. You could tell he was not going to let up, and he just punted his ass. And I have a problem with that. Like, give us a good race, because I'll tell you what, the 54 was better than the 19, but the 19 just had this kind of will, like he needed to go win the race. And it was almost like the guy in second place was just going to wreck the guy in first place. And I hate it when it comes down to that scenario. And we saw it a lot in the cup race. We even saw Chastain not wanting Hamlin behind him, like letting Hamlin go. So I don't like it when it becomes this, well, is he going to wreck behind? Am I just going to get wrecked? Am I sitting duck when I'm leading the race? Because, you know, these guys have teams and there's other careers that are tied to the finish of these cars. And I hate the fact that, you know, obviously, full disclosure, I had two Brandon Jones matchups that were winning the entire day that ended up losing because of something like that. So do I take that? I got to learn moving forward. Hey, if you have someone that's in a must-win scenario, you should only bet them in that win scenario, which, you know, he was probably 12-1 going into practice, and I think he went off like plus 950. I'd rather stick to that so that way the risk and the reward are even versus taking him in matchups, even though he was better than the other cars he was matched up against. The payoff wasn't there, so that's what I'm going to take moving forward from this is, hey, if a guy's in a must-win scenario, maybe just take him to win. Do not take him in matchups because they're going to do everything they can to win, and sometimes that means, you know, having your teammate wreck you. I can't believe I had to say that, but that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, well, let's also not bury the lead here. You, in those head-to-head matchups, you beat the market by about 70 or 80 cents. So in the grand scheme of thing, don't go around here crying poverty like you were going to try and trade out of those. You had ample opportunity to scalp those back, should that thought have crossed your mind beforehand. I'm waving the white flag with one to go on stage one, and I have to ask, Worm, in all of your life, in times you spent in bars throughout Old Town, through your time in Kalamazoo, have you ever seen a haymaker thrown like Austin Hill landed on Myatt Snider on pit road?
Oh, man. I will say nothing bad about Austin Hill ever again. I mean, that is a farm boy. Just
that's good old country thunder at its finest.
And the best part was, it was like haymaker. And for those of you that don't know what happened, Myatt Snider came up and apparently didn't like the way that Austin Hill had raced him. And this was kind of new news to Austin Hill when he had walked up to the car. And, you know, Myatt's telling him his side of the story, and I think Austin Hill's having none of it. And essentially Austin Hill said, all right, just get out of here, you know, because those drivers are hanging around their car, they're talking to whether it's sponsors or they're getting interviews after, and he's like, just get away from my car, get away. And Myatt wouldn't leave, and so Austin Hill just cleaned him. And I mean, this was, he knocked him down and then he jumped on top. So most people just saw him rolling around, and it wasn't until the day later where NASCAR got the footage of him just getting clocked, Myatt Snider, that is. And I think he sent a message. I mean, there's no one in the Cup Series that's going to stand up to Austin Hill. I don't think there's anybody in any series that's going to say, yeah, I'd like to fight Austin Hill, especially after seeing that one-hitter quitter.
The only one who might, and maybe not at this point in his life because he's a little bit older and not quite in his physical prime. I mean, I'd put Ryan Newman up against Austin Hill and right around to pick him, or maybe make Hill a $1.30 favorite.
Yep, yeah. I think that might be the closest, but I still think, man, he's big and he's long, and that was not the first punch he's thrown, that's for sure.
Definitely not the first time he'd ever come out of his shoes to try and land a shot to another guy's dome. But incredible footage when that circulated Monday, because I don't think anybody, to your point, really saw it unfold in real time on Saturday, and it wasn't talked about on Sunday either. You can follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. Follow me on social media at Todd Furman, and most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Stage two, Wormzer, we start to shift our gears towards a Phoenix preview, and we're looking at the track specs. Phoenix International Raceway opened back in 1964. It's a 1 mile flat oval, 1,500 feet on the front stretch, a shade less than 1,200 feet on the back stretch, 312 laps that remind us that's how we define a champion. And when you're looking at the stage length, 75 for stage one, 115 for stage two, 122 for stage three. This is your de facto home track. I know you've seen plenty of racing here, both from the grandstand, along pit road, Rattlesnake Hill, everywhere else. When you're trying to start your handicapping process, what are the track comps you use as a barometer for what to expect on Sunday at Phoenix?
Yeah, so this week, you know, obviously Phoenix is, I thought that on the Stacking Pennies podcast, Corey LaJoy used the term a tweener, and I think that's pretty accurate, but I'm going to base it off of a couple of tracks that I think just in the past have been very similar when it comes to tire, and I think it's the same tire from New Hampshire and Richmond. So I don't like Richmond as much, so I'm going to exclude Richmond. I'm going to use the first Phoenix race, I'm going to use New Hampshire, and then I'm going to use Gateway. And the reason I'm going to use Gateway is when listening to Kurt Busch during the Xfinity race at Gateway, he said that this place drives very similarly to Phoenix. And, you know, there is a little bit more tire fall off at Phoenix than there is at Gateway. But I still think the fact that it drives very similarly, and we did see some correlation between, you know, Briscoe ran obviously really well at Phoenix One and then also looked really good at Gateway. I think that we can, it's safe to say that we can use that as a track comp. So I'm just using Gateway, Phoenix, and Loudon. Those would be the two that, or the three, I guess you could say, two tracks outside of Phoenix. I'm not going to include Richmond just because this year there was a massive difference in temperature between both of those races, the early Richmond and the later Richmond race. And there's just so much more tire fall off there that I just don't think that you can, you know, glean too much information and make that a track comp.
No, it makes sense. I mean, you have to try and look at some of those variables, figure out exactly how the pieces will fit together. And while more data points usually help create an informed decision, if they're going to confuse some of what you're trying to parse out and figuring out, hey, look, here's the average finish, here's the driver rating, here are the other metrics that we want to include in our handicapping equation, then you definitely want to try and exclude that. We'll get to the championship four drivers in stage three. I don't want to hit on them now. So when we're looking at the handicap for Phoenix, obviously the history of NASCAR since they've gone to this format, the driver that wins the championship wins the final race. It's happened every year since 2014. So we're trying to look outside the box and identify a little bit of potential value, or maybe even more so in head-to-head matchups in terms of guys you're looking at. So for me, there's four guys that I want to pick your brain on. If there's somebody that I didn't cover here, by all means, throw them in there. Love to get your take. We'll start with Kyle Larson. He's racing for an owner's championship. He's priced at 14-1. Five top 10 finishes so far this postseason, an average finish inside the top 10 over the last seven races. And the five in all of the mayhem and all of the chaos we saw at Martinsville ends up coming home in second place last Sunday.
Well, I thought, you know, that was the one bet that we had that, you know, we had two bets that I thought were dead in the water. You know, we had some Chase Briscoe and we had some, you know, driver on the pole to lead or to win the race. And unfortunately, it was, you know, I wish it wasn't driver to win the pole. I wish it was driver to have the first pit stall, because as soon as Kyle Larson gave his pit stall to Chase Elliott, I was like, oh, great. Now that bet's cooked. I wish it wasn't pole. I wish it was first pit stall. You know, Larson ran a decent race there. I don't think he was necessarily a top five car last week. Now, if you look at track comps and Larson this year, and I'm just going off of those three that we had talked about, you know, a 10th place qualifying, but his average finish is 20th. And I know that Larson, you know, he won here last year, but let's, if you sit back and think, that car last year, that the five car was a very dominant car. I remember a very smart person say that maybe the most dominant car we've seen in NASCAR history, which was myself, and I was wrong. But that car won 10 races last year. We haven't seen that same kind of domination this year from that team. Now, the one thing that's unknown is it's the first time we've ever had someone outside of the Championship Four racing for the Owners' Championship. And whether those Championship Four drivers just, you know, will themselves to running one through four, or they have something a little extra, does that transfer over to the Owners' Championship? Because it's a bigger financial win than the Drivers' Championship. So I'm kind of curious on that. I know that there's been a lot of love on Larson this week on Twitter, and he just doesn't have kind of the finishes at Phoenix that I'd kind of expect. He was not the best car there last year in the championship. He just won the race off pit road. It'll be interesting to see. He's kind of I have a big question mark over that five team this week, but I would not be shocked if he unloads well and likes his car. I expect him to be mixing it up there with those the driver championship drivers.
Denny Hamlin, 16-1, we'll call the consensus price tag on the 11. Obviously devastated in the wake of not qualifying for the championship, trying to add the final career milestone that he needs to cement himself in NASCAR lore. Only finish outside the top 10 during the playoffs was the Roval. Average finish of 0.44 during the 10 playoff races was actually the best. When you look at Denny Hamlin's prospects, can I interest you in a price tag of 16-1?
You know, Todd, I have notes on this. It said this is just a crazy price on the 11 at Phoenix. And it just is. And I know that we have to look at this like, okay, you know, the championship four run 1-4 typically, or at least they have the best four driver rating and kind of the fastest cars. I don't know how Denny responds in this situation. You know, he's been in the championship four in the past and, you know, obviously hasn't ever, you know, had a chance to race the trophy. You know, another question mark here. I think that I have a bigger question mark over Denny than I do Larson, because maybe Larson has a little something in you know, in the tank to compete with those four other drivers to win that, you know, owner's championship. Denny, I don't know that we can. I'm not interested in a win price until after I see practice and qualifying and driver comments. If drivers are saying, wow, there's a lot of other teams outside of the championship four that are faster, then maybe I'll entertain that Denny Hamlin price. But right now I'm looking at Denny in matchups. I think that if you have an opportunity to take him over another non-championship guy, I do think Denny, he's just been so great this year. They've made mistakes and they've overcome those mistakes and gotten decent finishes, but they haven't put the whole thing together to help him advance. And that's been the downfall of this, you know, a lot of the Toyotas this whole season. So not super interested in the 16-1 win price, but I will be looking at him in matchups. I think he'll run well.
The former King of the Desert Mile, Kevin Harvick, 18-1, finished sixth here back in the spring, last seven races, doesn't have a victory at Phoenix, but historically has been one of the most dominant drivers at this particular track. The issue being from the days of him being priced at 3-2 or 9-5 to win the races seemed to be something of yesteryear. Hasn't led all that many laps, but is still held in a high regard because you more or less can pencil him into a top 10.
Arguably one of the best cars here in the spring as well. You know, for someone that didn't show a lot of speed in practice or hasn't qualified super well this entire season, arguably one of the fastest cars at Phoenix. I think he was running, you know, third or fourth when kind of that last caution came, and I think he slid to outside the top five, but definitely was able to work his way through the field. If you couple that with last year when he was also not in the final four, he was arguably the fastest car not in the championship four and was able to pass some of those cars. I think he drove by all three or four of those guys in the middle of stage one and took the lead, and then Martin Truex kind of turned it on and he went and passed Harvick back. But Harvick was the one guy that was able to kind of run with or around some of those championship guys throughout the whole day, arguably as good or better at points throughout the race. Again, I don't know that he's gonna be there to win the race. Until I see practice, it's really hard to say what non-playoff guys will be competitive, but I certainly am not afraid to put some big boy matchups on Kevin Harvick if his car looks good against other non-playoff guys.
All right, I got one more for you here. He also drives a blue oval. That would be the 12 car of Ryan Blaney. Third most laps led over the last seven trips to Phoenix. Doesn't have a win to his credit just yet, but does have four top fives. It's been a topsy-turvy season for Ryan Blaney. Still looking for that first elusive victory in a points-paying race. The All-Star festivities feel like an eternity ago, and you saw a guy who obviously was frustrated, knows he's had some very good cars under him, was pretty good last weekend at Martinsville. Can this be the race where he breaks through at a price of 20-1?
I do like this driver the most for a couple reasons. Number one, I think he was the best car in the spring, and he's had some issues and he had to deal with some adversity, but it was the one place where he was actually able to drive back through the field. You know, historically, or at least recently, Ryan Blaney back in traffic, he doesn't do super well with that dirty air, but he was able to work his way back up at Phoenix, which means I think he's comfortable there. The other thing is he qualifies exceptionally well at comp tracks. I mean, he's behind Christopher Bell, who we'll talk about in a minute, but Ryan Blaney, his average starts 5.7 and his average finish is 8.7. I mean, those are some pretty good numbers for a guy that does like to qualify well at Phoenix. I think if you run a clean race at Phoenix, you know, let's just say we have a normal race with, you know, not a ton of cautions. If the 12 car puts it on the pole and he's just out there kind of, you know, 1 or 2 seconds behind some of the playoff guys, I think that those playoff guys are going to be just fine with not winning the race and winning the championship. And if there's a driver that I think that could go out there and do that, I do think it's Ryan Blaney. that could go out there and qualify well enough to not have to pass those the playoff guys. There's a big difference between being ahead of them and having to pass them, because you want to be cautious around them. I think Ryan Blaney, because he does qualify so well in those contracts, could be one of those guys that maybe he just sets sail throughout the day and everyone else is kind of fighting for second. So I will say this. I do like that Ryan Blaney 20-1 price more so than I like that the Harvick, Hamlin, or Larson prices.
That's fair. It's all about numbers. Numbers dictate decisions when it comes to being a sports bettor, and everyone has a buy point. Everyone also has a sell point as well. Just a quartet of drivers who could factor into some interesting head-to-head matchups as you look towards Sunday's race. We wave the white flag on stage two with one to go. It's all about on-track activities. And they actually started up yesterday. When you look at the schedule for later today on Friday, forecast, Phoenix, I'm not going to cover it because if we get rain there, I would be shocked. Tonight at 6:05, you're looking at Truck Series qualifying. You can see that on FS1. Once that wraps up, the Xfinity boys get onto the track at 7:05 Eastern. That's available on USA Network. And the Cup practice late into the evening on the East Coast, 8:05 to 8:55. A little bit longer session than you've grown accustomed to, USA Network. So we'll take a look at that. And at 10 p.m., the Truck Series will drop the green flag on their championship race, 150 laps, 150 miles. You can check that out on FS1. When you move towards Saturday, 2:30 to 3:20, Xfinity Series qualifying on the NBC Sports app. Directly after that, Cup Series qualifying gets underway at 3:35 Eastern. You can check that out on USA Network. And the Xfinity Series Championship Race, 6 o'clock Saturday night, 200 laps, 200 miles, available on USA Network. And the final event of the NASCAR season, the Cup Series Championship. 312 laps, 312 miles. The stages that we've broken up, 75, 115, 122. That you can see on NBC, Peacock, Motor Racing Network, Sirius, XM, NASCAR, anywhere that you take in all of the on-track festivities. Stage three, Wormser, we do have four drivers vying for the Cup Series Championship. But before we get there, I want to pick your brain a little bit briefly on the Camping World Truck Series. When you look at the prices out there, Chandler Smith and Ty Majeski co-favorites right around plus $1.70. Some sportsbooks may vary. Zane Smith behind them at plus $2.70. And if you believe in Cinderella stories, Ben Rhodes the long shot at the board at 9-1. Of any of those quartet of drivers, someone catch your eye?
Well, I think no one catches my eye from a betting standpoint. But I do think that, you know, I want to highlight a couple things. I think Ty Majeski has just been so hot and consistent lately. Week in and week out, he's fast. You know, him and Chandler Smith, I guess at the closest comp track we can look at recently. I think we were at the race where there was no passing there at Richmond. And those two guys were arguably the best. I would give a slight edge to Majeski just on like the recency speed. But Chandler Smith did win here last year, and Chandler had a lot of speed earlier in the year, and he kind of was in a lull for the middle part of the season, and he's come on strong lately. You know, I think that I wouldn't be shocked if Chandler Smith and Ty Majeski kind of ran 1-2 all day. Zane Smith, you know, a ton of speed earlier in the year and has kind of fallen off a little bit. And I think Ben Rhodes, you know, Ben Rhodes is going to be kind of like the Chris Bell. He just hasn't had the speed week in and week out, but obviously in a must-win situation, I think he's going to be able to be really aggressive when it comes to strategy. So look out for Ben Rhodes to try to do something. And I'll tell you what, if Ben Rhodes gets clean air, he's a tough guy to pass. So I'm excited to watch this race. I think I'm actually going to head out there and watch this one live. But I do think that this is kind of a properly priced you know, the four championship drivers. I think that the books did a good job of identifying who the favorite should be and who the long shots should be. It should be a fun race. Not going to get involved in any of those prices at this point. I'll just be looking for matchups. And when I look at matchups, everything will be an apples to apples comparison. I will not have a matchup this weekend where it's a championship driver against a non-championship driver. Everything will stay championship drivers versus championship drivers and non-champ versus non-champ guys, just because I don't want strategy or a must-win scenario to affect my bets like it did with Brandon Jones. That is my salty take of the week.
Yeah, eliminate as many variables as you possibly can. Easier said than done, naturally, in this business. If you're going to be in attendance on Friday, are you going to follow it up with a double dip Saturday for the Xfinity Championship, where Noah Gregson is the favorite at plus $1.90, right behind him Ty Gibbs at a price just about 2-1, and then it's a pair of JRM teammates priced at a shade less than 4-1 at some books, Justin Allgaier and Josh Berry at plus $3.75. A trio of JRM drivers matched up against one from JGR.
This is so sad. There's three JRM cars when that's not necessary. So my notes here on this said, well, it ain't going to be Ty Gibbs. So, and I don't know if that's just jaded worm or if that's actually the truth. I actually don't think Ty Gibbs wins this championship. I think that he's raced too many guys, and he doesn't have enough friends up there. I don't care whether, yes, this is a very individual sport, but you still need to have guys that let you buy easy. And he doesn't even have teammates that'll let him buy easily. So if he slips up and he needs to get back some track position, he can't even look to his teammates, in my opinion. So I am not high on Ty Gibbs. I think that price is a little short anyway. I'm kind of shocked at this Justin Allgaier price. I mean,
That makes two of us.
I think Justin Allgaier, I mean, he is really, really good at Phoenix. And he's super patient there. I think that the best bet on the board in out of those four drivers is for sure Allgaier. I just, you know, this guy's beat Kyle Busch when he was in the 54 and super competitive. So if you're going to give the nod to anybody, it's definitely Justin Allgaier. It's hard to argue with Noah Gregson's speed, obviously great here earlier in the year. And then Josh Berry, you just never know what you're going to get with him because he doesn't qualify particularly well and it never looks great in practice, but he's just one of those guys that just kind of gets it done. I mean, he was average at Vegas in practice and average in qualifying, goes out there and wins the race with probably a third or fourth best car. So you definitely have kind of the young gun in Ty Gibbs versus the super hot, fast guy in Noah Gregson. Then you have kind of the wily vets in Allgaier and Berry. I'd give the nod to Allgaier. He just knows how to get around this track. And I would say that that's the best bet in the Xfinity series.
Yeah, Justin Allgaier, pick him against Ty Gibbs may encourage me to place a little head-to-head matchup even before we see the cars unload later today and get into the nuts and bolts of Saturday. But all right, the main attraction, what everyone came here for, is the Final Four and the Cup Series Sunday afternoon. And the best part about it, Wormser, is you have two NFL football games that are going head-to-head, the Seattle Seahawks against the Arizona Cardinals and the Bucks against the Rams. So everyone that's out there that considers them a sports fan, if they want drama, they should watch the race in its entirety, more so than two drag NFL
snore
games. This coming from an NFL fan. Chase Elliott, he is the favorite, plus 185 to win the championship, plus 250 to win the race. If you look at Chase Elliott, a win here would be his second Cup championship. We become just the fourth driver to win the championship and the regular season title in the same year. Chase Elliott already owns the championship at Phoenix that we mentioned back in 2020. He has the best seasonal average finish of the championship four, finished fifth or worse here since winning the championship in the last four races, four consecutive finishes overall of 10th place or worse. And when you look at his playoff numbers, average playoff finish outside the top 16, just a pair of top fives, three top tens by virtue of Brad getting disqualified. And on the season, five wins, 12 top fives, 20 top tens. Chase Elliott, fair or foul, the way he's being priced in the market?
I think foul. I think that he's overvalued right now. Now, I could be completely wrong. I know that he runs well here, but if you go back and look, like outside of a few road courses and maybe even only Watkins Glen, he may have only been the best car at Watkins Glen this year. Yes, I understand the Nashville, but that was a race that went later into the night after a rain break, and he actually stole track position by taking tires. So I just don't know when I've ever looked at a race and said that Chase Elliott's the fastest guy or had the fastest car. They've just had a complete team effort all season, and I feel like a broken record talking about this. But he just hasn't had a I've never said, oh, Chase Elliott's had a rocket. Like, I haven't said that all year. You know, he was abysmal in Las Vegas, like just not even speed. And then, you know, he ran well at Homestead, but he was just kind of fighting off, you know, hanging on to track position. As soon as he got mired back in traffic, he was terrible. So I think he's a little overpriced. I know that, you know, odds makers have to hang something knowing where they think that the public's going to bet. And obviously, as you know, NASCAR's most popular driver, they're going to see a lot of action on Chase Elliott. I am just not interested in getting involved anywhere from plus 185 to plus 250. He doesn't have the qualifying there either. So we'll see what happens. But I am not high on Chase Elliott out of the four championship drivers.
Joey Logano, the driver of the Penske number 22 machine. Joey Logano has more wins at Phoenix 2 than his rivals combined. He's led 721 laps at the track. If Joey Logano wins Worm, he will score his second championship and become the 17th driver with multiple cup titles. He would then become the first cup driver to win two championships as a member of Team Penske after winning here back in 2018, or winning a title back in 2018. Average finish of fifth here over his last five trips to the Desert Mile. When you look at seasons, stats, his average playoff finish 13.33, four top tens, three wins on the season, 10 top fives, 16 top tens. Joey Logano, can he get it done and unload with the fastest race winning machine on Sunday?
Well, I think that all of them can get it done, but from a price perspective, I think that this is probably my favorite price. I mean, this team has had 2 weeks, and after this week, three full weeks to concentrate on this specific race. I know that they were fast at Vegas, but that doesn't mean that they spent a lot of time trying to get that car fast. Obviously, they spent some time, but they were always in the back of their mind, we need to be fast at Phoenix. And he was a rocket in Vegas. And I think that just goes to show you that the speed that this car has right now. I think that you look at Homestead, I feel like that's kind of stands out as just a very different type track. But, you know, Martinsville, he was average, whatever, kind of ho-humming around. But I think that this team was looking forward. And I think that, you know, as someone that qualifies super, super well at Phoenix and in comp tracks, I think his average, well, I know his average starting spot is, 9.7. I think he'll do better than that. And, you know, he's tough when he gets out front here. And I think that, you know, he can maybe take some of the stuff that 12 team had in the spring and apply it to that team in the 22. And I think that this is kind of the best championship bet on the board right now. Here's the other thing. I think he'll qualify well. So if you're interested in Joey Logano, I'd rather see you get involved here at this price, at that plus 350 to plus 400. Do it now, because I think if he qualifies well and, you know, a guy like Chase slips up a little bit in qualifying or in practice or maybe struggles even, I think Logano could be the favorite for the championship when we see the green flag fly on Sunday.
Makes a ton of sense. I mean, the 22 feels like the driver that's been an afterthought for everybody, not just this race, but all season. And when you look at some of the comps that are out there, showed speed at New Hampshire, was on a different strategy, was good at Phoenix earlier this year, and at Gateway, we knew what he was able to do to ultimately grab that lead, went off at a ridiculously short price in that 5.5 to 6 to 1 range. Christopher Bell, plus 250 to win the championship. Race winning odds right around 3 to 1, could move himself into elite driver status. A title would cement that and maybe anoint him as the best driver at JGR going forward. Things for him turned a corner with his Key Loudon victory over the summer, and since then he's turned in another 7 top fives and 2 playoff victories. Led the most laps of any Championship 4 driver in the playoffs with 311. No other contender has led more than 140, and he's the only one with 2 postseason wins and 5 top fives through the first 9 races. The added level of pressure in those top 5 victories, he won an elimination scenario in the Roval and won an elimination scenario last weekend at Martinsville. Obviously, Bell works with the luxury of having crew chief Adam Stevens. That's felt like a fixture in the championship. Four during his years, guiding Kyle Busch to a pair of titles, raced for the championship together 5 straight seasons from 2015 to 2019 before he parted ways with the 18. And you begin to wonder if the 20 and Adam Stevens, this could launch a dynastic relationship going forward. When you look at some of the season numbers for Christopher Bell, we mentioned his average playoff finish, 5 top fives, 3 wins this year, 12 top fives overall, 19 top tens. We know listeners of the Stay Green podcast most likely have an investment in Christopher Bell, and we'll get to that in a second. But as far as his price before he unloads at Phoenix, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are he's going to qualify well. Average comp tracks, he has the best average starting spot at 4. And then, but his average finishes were 12, you know, over those three races. Where he struggled was Phoenix. You know, he had a 26th place finish. I know that he had some issues, you know, but then he turns it around and comes back and wins at Loudon. So I don't know what to think of Chris Bell. I know that this guy just gets better every race, and he gets better throughout the race. I think he's going to qualify well, you know, may potentially even pull it. Like I said, I still, there's so many unknowns. Like, is this car going to be, have that souped up championship car, or is it just going to be a normal car? I don't know. You know, for those of you that, you know, have Chris Bell at 20-1, you know, or 22-1, which is where I have him, you know, I'm going to wait till after practice and qualifying, because I think you're going to see his odds drop. I do think he'll look a little bit better than some of those other guys when it comes to qualifying. So I'm going to go ahead and wait on, you know, hedging out. I don't even know. I'm not in this position to necessarily hedge at that 22-1 price, but listen, if you have Chris Bell at 100-1, you can go ahead and hedge. Okay. You know, some people to me were saying like, well, what do I do? I'm like, no, you can hedge. You can guarantee yourself money. If you have Chris Bell at 100-1, go ahead and bet everybody else. Okay. And you can make money. This is not super difficult math, you know, in order to guarantee yourself a profit. So, I mean, am I wrong about that? If you have 100-1, you can go ahead and bet everybody else and guarantee yourself.
Yeah,
money.
I mean, lay out the numbers for yourself. And I know a lot of people that do this profession, like, oh, hedging is for landscapers. The reality of it is, if you have a chance to make a big score, I know some of the listeners have reached out and they may have $50, they may have $100 at prices of 60-1 or even greater. It's all about the risk threshold that you feel comfortable. If you want to let it ride and you're perfectly comfortable going boom or bust, hey, more power to you. I understand completely. I've been in some of those same spots in other sports. If you're looking to try and maximize your return or end up turning a profit, most importantly, for the entire NASCAR season, lay out the different scenarios, shop around. Some books, depending on the jurisdictions you're in, have yes, no prices that are available. And that may be a cheaper alternative than trying to blanket the field with three other drivers. So it's all about the individual appetite for risk versus reward. And we never want to steer anybody in a particular direction. But at 100-1, I think you'd be a little bit foolish to walk away with absolutely nothing if things didn't go the way of the 20.
Yeah, so my advice would be, I would take, if you're sitting on you know, that 100-1 price, and I think that's a specific question that we've had. Like, I think 20-1, I would rather see practice and qualifying if I'm going to hedge in any way. But if you have 100-1, I would take Joey Logano right now. I think you can still get him at 4-1 if you price shop. I would get that now because I do think he'll qualify well, and I think he's probably going to look the best in practice. You obviously don't have to worry about Chris Bell. He's going to qualify well. So when Chris Bell qualifies well, which is what I anticipate, his odds are going to shrink, especially if he looks good in practice. And then you might get a better price on someone like Chase Elliott, in which case you can hedge out at a better price versus this 2-1 that we're seeing currently. And then when it comes to Chastain, you know, he doesn't necessarily qualify well on these tracks. He does, however, finish well. So Ross Chastain's, his average finish on comp tracks was 15, or his average start was 15th. I don't think he's going to qualify 15th, but I think that that's just an indication of the fact that I don't see him qualifying as well at Phoenix as some of these other championship contenders. He tends to race way better than he qualifies. So if you look at him, like, he qualified 17th earlier in the year, then 10th at Gateway, and then 18th at Loudon. However, his average finish on those was 6th. So he's able to work his way through the field. So I would wait on Chastain, and I would wait on Elliott. I think both of those guys right now, you might see better prices on them. Whereas I think Logano and Bell, I see their price dropping. Todd, how'd I do on my hedge advice?
You hedged your bets. You even acted like a politician here, dancing back and forth between the raindrops, straddling the line. I mean, I'm not even quite sure how to preface this or to properly articulate it. As you can see, I'm stumbling over my words, but I think this is what's so interesting for those bettors out there that have set themselves up in an advantageous position. You obviously don't want to walk away empty-handed, but you also don't want to chase good money that you have at good numbers, just throwing it away and lighting it on fire. So there's so many different ways to try and go about it. Hopefully our listeners that have a little bit of skin in the game with Christopher Bell at long shot prices are going to find themselves sitting pretty here. You mentioned Ross Chastain. He's a driver that I have as part of my portfolio at a long shot price. So that's where I'll be rooting, but I'm also trying to figure out if I want to protect with the 9 or the 22, something that I've deliberated over the course of the last 5 days since I saw Chastain punch his ticket to get into the Final Four. So a lot of things to factor into the equation when you're ultimately trying to identify how to maximize some of your return. You can follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod for all things Stay Green and a variety of other shows that we have part of the Bet the Board podcast network. Wormser, it's the final time I get to ask you around these parts as far as actionable items as it stands here on Friday heading into a championship weekend. Where do you see some betting value on the board? And I'll open it up, the Xfinity Series or the Cup Series, should something really jump out at you.
Yeah, I'm going to stick in the Cup Series, and I'm actually going to, you know, you had mentioned on a podcast earlier tonight that you had liked Chase Briscoe over William Byron, and I'm going to add a little bit to this. I think Chase Briscoe has had an incredible year, and what he did last week at Martinsville, I think that all of SHR, and especially the driver of that 14 car, deserves, you know, a standing ovation. This kid has been awesome this year, and he actually put himself in a position to win after, you know, a terrible penalty on pit road. Yes, I understand that this is a team sport, but man, he did everything he could. He was down a lap and he fought his way back out and actually had a chance to win that damn race and put himself in position at Phoenix. You know, if you look at, you know, going into the race, I would have had Byron and Briscoe rated the same. And after the race, I would say that Briscoe was way faster. Byron was not able to work his way through the field, and Briscoe was. And I think that right now that 14 team is running well. I like the fact that he's an underdog in this matchup. When it comes to qualifying here, they're very similar. You know, William Byron is on comp tracks, is 11th this year, average starting spot. Chase Briscoe is 12th, but he also had a great qualifying at Gateway, which is arguably the closest you know, comp track that we have. I think you'll see Chase Briscoe up front. I think he'll qualify better than William Byron. And my best bet, I will tail you, and I will take...
it finally happened. 20 episodes of the Stay Green podcast. You're seeing the light, and people are figuring out who the brains are behind this operation.
Me picking something and me seeing the light are two completely different things. So I'll take Chase Briscoe.
That's very fair. I could probably hit you in the head. I can't make that joke now, but
yeah, easy. This is NASCAR.
Yeah, no, I caught myself before I got there. Trust me.
I'll take Chase Briscoe plus 105 against William Byron. And like I said, that's kind of a loose, you know, maybe half a unit play. And then we'll hopefully have something on race day. I apologize for not having anything in Martinsville, but I thought the time.
Hey, hold on a second. No reason to apologize. We want to try and give people an opportunity to make money. We're not here for action. And that was the reason we didn't send out a race day matchup last week at Martinsville. This week, though, because it is the last race of the season and people need their fix, I'm going to force your hand and I'm going to make you do it before you end up trackside and claim you have no cell service.
Yeah, sorry, Todd. I was at the race. You know, I was overcome with excitement and I wasn't able to do it. So, yeah, we'll have something on Sunday. I definitely think that there will be some non-championship driver matchups that I think we could find some value on. And I certainly think that Chase Briscoe won Phoenix for a reason. And that was because he was great at shifting. And, you know, he was up there all day. So I anticipate more of the same out of him, especially after seeing a great run at Phoenix. He has to be super confident. And then a guy like William Byron, who just, I thought his car was going to be great. He thought his car was going to be great. And he didn't go anywhere all day long.
Your first season of producing content for a sport very near and dear to you that you've been betting religiously for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. If you had to rate your overall performance, Worm, would it be worthy of a championship four inclusion, or would you have had the fate of Denny Hamlin where we could have bumped you at Martinsville?
I feel like I'm more the Denny Hamlin. You know, I think I had a good run. I had some hiccups. I had some good shows and some bad shows. I've had some good predictions and some bad predictions. But, you know, it's a learning experience. I'm going to turn around and I'm going to get better this offseason. I'm going to give you the same, you know, I guess like Tim Tebow talk. Like, I will get better. This will never happen again, you know, type scenario whenever we lose. But I thought it was great. here's the other thing too, is it definitely benefits me to have these conversations. You know, a lot of the times when I'm making my picks in the past, it was like, oh, this is what I think. And it's nice to be held accountable by other guys in this industry when they ask why. And, you know, explaining that if you can't explain something or teach some topic to someone, then you don't fully understand it. So this has been a great learning experience for me, realizing what I do understand or what I don't understand. So, you know, as selfish as it may be, I get a lot from this by having this conversation with you weekly, and then people chiming into the DMs, asking questions. It's been a great learning experience, for myself. And hopefully it's been a learning experience for, everyone that listens.
Well, lucky for you, you had a pit crew like Christopher Bell and not Denny Hamlin. So we'll put you in the championship four and the support network you've surrounded yourself with. Again, I want to thank all of the listeners that have been with us, some members of the Bet the Board family who have grown accustomed to our college football and NFL podcast over the year, and some of the other ancillary avenues we've chosen to travel down. This was our first foray into a slightly different endeavor. We had the huge support from NASCAR, which allowed us to get the Stay Green podcast off the ground. So I want to thank the folks for NASCAR that believed in this particular program, allowed us to become so successful through a 20 episode trial run of sorts. And I can't wait to get this thing off the ground again. Maybe we'll do a little off-season coverage as well once we start to see future odds circulate for the 2023 season. And before we know it, we'll be playing the Super Bowl down there near neck of the woods in Glendale, and we'll be counting the hours and minutes to the Daytona 500, much like Larry McReynolds has made famous for all of those years. So thanks again to all of you members of the NASCAR betting community, the loyal Bet the Board listeners that have taken a jump into the deep end of the pool and have found themselves watching NASCAR alongside their beloved National Football League every Sunday. And a special thanks to NASCAR for making all of this possible. Follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Best of luck with all of your Sunday endeavors. And for the sake of our bankrolls and everything else, let's hope it's Christopher Bell being crowned NASCAR champion for the first time in his illustrious career. And hopefully we'll see you at the window.